Morning, Chair, members of the committee. Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. We heard 2368 last week. Basically, it's dealing with the cigarette tax laws, including the other tobacco products tax laws. Clean those laws up to essentially facilitate enforcement, increasing penalties, and making it clear in both cases, both in the case of cigarettes and other tobacco products, that the ultimate consumer is the one who's ultimately liable for the tax. We have the bill essentially addresses the existing laws and also in Business, Labor, and Economic Development Committee, I guess they amended the bill to include some provisions which address what are called delivery sales, essentially mail order and internet sales, which are delivered to the consumer. And we have some amendments coming which are not available today, but hopefully will be available tomorrow when the bill is rescheduled, which will give you two alternatives, essentially, as far as dealing with those delivery sales. We do have available today the A7 amendments, which amend the bill essentially to fund the tobacco task force, tobacco tax enforcement task force, or whatever, from the department's suspense account. Tax revenues that are collected by the department go into a suspense account before they're identified for distribution either to the health plan, the general fund, the tobacco use reduction account, or to the local governments. And this would allow the Department of Revenue, given authority by Ways and Means, an appropriation, essentially other fund appropriation, to pay the costs of this enforcement process out of those monies. And so you have a revenue impact statement, which I had not done before, which shows essentially what I guess I expect going in will be the amount of money that Ways and Means is going to allow the department to spend for this purpose, and showing the reductions in the various distributions as a result of that. There is, in the current law forecast, already $8.6 million, which is scheduled to come from the activities of the increased enforcement. And if the task force were not directed to undertake these activities, then that money would have to come out of the current law forecast. So I guess are there questions on the A5 amendments? They're pretty straightforward. They deal with two distribution formulas: the cigarette tax in the first case, which is 323455, and is just allowing the Department of Revenue reimbursement along with the State Police and the Department of Justice for their enforcement activity. Okay. Then in Section 53, on page 2 of the amendments, you have the same sort of change with respect to the other tobacco products tax. And that's...
Are you saying
A5
or
A7? A7.
Yeah.
Did I say A5? I'm sorry. A5 we talked about last time, and there seems to be among the players involved not much disagreement with that amendment. It's the A6 amendments which are being redone and deal with delivery sales and are not available at this time.
I don't have two pages to A7. Do you get?
I think it's on the flip side, on the back side, or is there supposed to be two pages?
Mine's single-sided, yeah. So.
Well, we may not have the whole thing.
You may not have the whole thing.
Because I have just a short... I have a short little piece on the back. Your A7 looks longer than my A7 did.
You're missing the page 2, I would say, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. That might be helpful. Dick, so did I hear you correctly that we don't have, there is still some disagreement among the stakeholders as to the A6s, is that right?
That's what we got.
That is my understanding, and that you
that's
will get A8 and A9 amendments tomorrow.
addressing that.
Can I just? I think she's confused. We only have a side that has a page 3 and a page 1, but we don't have one that has the page 2.
Okay. Mr. Ashton?
I was hoping to, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was hoping that Dick could clarify what the status is of the disagreement among the A6s, so I could get a sense of where we were at in that process.
Okay.
I've not been a party to that discussion. My understanding is that the non-participating manufacturers, which are primarily foreign manufacturers that are delivering into this country through delivery sales, are concerned about some of the language in there, and particularly addressing the what's called a qualifying statute, which deals with the master settlement agreement. And so I can't really discuss the details of the two alternatives that will come before you tomorrow. But,
okay. But they'll be up tomorrow then?
They'll be up tomorrow.
Okay.
Representative, did you have a question? My question was whether the A7s are standalone amendments.
Yes.
Without the 6s. Okay.
Yes.
Representative Berger?
We're going to have AH and 9s tomorrow?
Correct.
Yes.
And will they wrap in the 6 and 7s, or will they all be separate?
They will. 5s, as I understand it, will be incorporated into the two new amendments, the A5. A6 will be replaced by one of the two.
Okay. I have another question, Mr. Chairman, if you might. At the bottom of the page here on the revenue impact, the comment, current law forecast includes $8.6 million in cigarette tax revenue from these enforcement efforts?
Correct.
Enforcement costs were general fund appropriations in 203. 0305. So I'm not sure I understand the way that the sentence is written. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
That's perfectly clear to me.
Might be, but it's clear as mud to me. And it's the word from that I'm confused about.
From. Well, what you had was an adjustment to the forecast when the task force was formed, because they essentially committed to raising $8.6 million in additional revenue as a result of their enforcement activities. So the forecast was bumped up $8.6 million per biennium, and that's built into the forecast, assuming that that task force would continue and those enforcement activities would take place. Now, those activities were funded in the 2001 appropriations out of the general fund. During the special sessions, a lot of that was cut back, but in the first part of this year, and I'm not real sure about the history here, but I think it was the first part of this session, some of that funding was restored so that they are active, but they do need a funding source for the 03-05 biennium. And this change now, this amendment, would change the source of the funds for the enforcement activities from the general fund to essentially coming out of the cigarette tax collections that are increased as a result of those enforcement activities.
Okay. So, follow-up, please.
Sure.
My next question is, if I understand what you're telling me, that is, the enforcement efforts from the Justice Department and the State Police over a biennium will amount to $8.6 million.
That was the earlier estimate. My understanding is that they are actually, in the way that they track revenues, doing a little better than they expected to. We can have the department comment on that. We have people here.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yes. Representative Berger.
Yeah. Dick, I'm glad that Representative Berger asked these questions, because I had the same one. So what this amendment basically says is it's going to take 3.2 out to gain 8.6. Is that? No.
No, I think that's roughly true.
Okay. It's going to cost...
8.6 is in there already, and if you don't do the enforcement activities, you're going to lose it.
Right.
So it's costing, you know, and we're only looking at an appropriation for one biennium here in terms of the 3.2. I don't know what is anticipated in terms of the required appropriation in future bienniums once this thing is sort of brought up to speed and running. But for the current 03-05 biennium, that's the price of the 8.6 is 3.2 million.
Got it.
Other questions? Okay. I think since we're going to have at least two additional amendments tomorrow, I'll close the work session on this, and we will bring it back tomorrow and see what we do. And next, I will open a work session on 2299.
Mazen? Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mazen Maddox, Legislative Revenue Office. Let me go quickly again over House Bill 2299. In order to try to bring it back into focus. If you think about the tools for economic development in the state, there are about four, and some people would think of them about five, or they think the number would be five. The first one would be targeted towards small business and small investment. That would be the small city program. This is not dealt with in House Bill 2299 at this time. It was dealt with House Bill 2298. This gives an exemption, an income tax credit, an exemption for small businesses. And then you would have the second one, that will be the SIP, or the Strategic Investment Program. The Strategic Investment Program has been historically targeted towards large, very big investments and multi-million dollars, actually in the billions. And in the 90s, it was able to attract many semiconductor investments into the Portland metro region, Washington County in particular. This is the exemption that gives property tax exemption for anything above $100 million. The new revamping of this program in House Bill 2299 tailors this SIP program towards the rural areas, with reducing the cap, if you will, to $25 million. The reduction of this cap will basically still be on property taxes. The third one, of course, would be the short-term enterprise zones. And enterprise zones give 3 to 5 years property tax exemptions. And this will be geared towards small and medium businesses in concentrations or blocks of economic development. Long-term, but before we go to this bill, in House Bill 2299, makes a few changes into the program, the short-term investment, short-term enterprise zones, and opens it for more of the businesses applying. The long-term enterprise zones is one of the most generous enterprise zones. It opens exemptions for at least seven and up to 15 years in property taxes with lower amounts of investment, $25 million, yet for the non-urban areas, that is probably a very high number. The investment threshold also could be lower because it comes with a percentage of assessed values in the property of the county. And finally, some people would term the urban renewal program as an economic development. The number of amendments that we have come up with for House Bill 2299, well, we didn't come up with many, but we're up to number 10 at this point. And those amendments, just to go quickly over them, we start with the A5 that in itself deals primarily with the definition of the rural areas in order for the benefit of the SIP program in the rural areas. It defines the urban growth boundary relationship to that. The A6 was the amendment to allow special districts to go into opt-out provisions from the exemptions. A6 will be superseded by A8. A8 is a better language to the belief of the people involved with it. And the last time we've talked about it, A7 is also superseded by the A9. And the A7 and the A9, the differences between them, it is the A7 and A9s are geared both towards the short-term enterprise zones. And it gives a choice whether a qualified business who doesn't meet the qualification in the first year, the A7, which we don't have, will continue giving them the exemptions. The A9 allows the sponsoring agency, the sponsoring enterprise zone, to give them year per year as they qualify exemption for any of the 5 years that they would be into the program. Finally, the A10 that have been dealing with two cases that we've discussed in the committee the last time, and this has to be power generation or the centrally assist utilities, and to what to give the exemption for that type of business, locating in an enterprise zone, and the ability of an urban renewal district, if an urban renewal district exists, to opt out of that provision. That would take care and deal with the issues that were brought up last time with the counties. Finally, the revenue impact. I was able to put the preliminary revenue impact on these issues, and let me go quickly over that. The revenue impact, as seen in this bill, is quite involved in a sense. The new rural SIP program, which is the reducing the cap from 100 million to 25 million in the time where the area is non-urban, seems to be an attempt to be able to use this tool to attract businesses. However, I think if unless it is a unique situation where the business has this niche between the long-term enterprise zone and the urban areas, this is probably not going to be utilized to attract big projects as the semiconductor industries that exist or came into the 90s. And after all, the semiconductor industries probably with a lot of slack at this time. They have a lot of capacity unutilized and needs to take a few years before we're able to utilize most of that capacity. So if a business, again, is faced with these two choices, between 10 years of paying only on the first $25 million versus the long-term enterprise zone of 15 years of exemption, total exemption, in addition, the long-term enterprise zones gives them the chance or opens a window for income tax credit. That would probably be the most attractive between the two for a business locating in a rural area. We think that probably would be the route to go. However, in the even if a business chooses this program, the time for construction and get to production until that is effective will take probably a few years, and in the short term, this might not end up into the impact, either positive or negative, for the short term and coming few years. However, if one business chooses to go to that, at least one of the level of we're talking about above $25 million, there probably will be a positive impact. That means more taxing revenues into coming to the districts to the tune of about $645,000 or $650,000. And this comes from the fact that you would be taxing structures that otherwise would not have been there. Previously, you're only looking at the land. Now you have a big project with millions of dollars that will bring this $25 million cap. At least the first $25 million will be taxed, in addition to the community service fee of up to $500,000 that goes to the taxing districts. The allowance for the second revenue impact source is the allowance for the centrally assessed properties or utilities to qualify for either the SIP or the long-term enterprise zones. This will attract these utilities to build into the areas where designated where they most advantageous in business sense to them. And we think most of these projects, especially power generation, would have locate in these in the state at any rate, and into that logic, we would think there is might be a negative impact to the taxing districts of the tune of about $350,000 a year. Now, the third source, there is a waiver in. Or a change in the short-term enterprise zone program, and the change goes from having to show a 10% increase in employment or at least one additional FTE the 10% doesn't work. That change or waiver of requirement from the employment to the 10% increase in productivity, which means how much you produce out of the same number of hours of labor. That is the change that is coming in from House Bill 2299. This impact would probably benefit a number of companies, especially at this time, where they would have not been able to accomplish or get to the point where they increase employment at this time, but on productivity per hour productive labor, going 10%, that is a lot more attainable, which opens a door for them, if you will, into getting the exemptions that otherwise they would have lost if they have not gotten into the employment picture. So this will, in essence, prevent about $400,000 from coming back to the tax rolls per year, thinking that the averages will keep rolling as we have seen in the short-term enterprise zones. The amendment, amendment, primarily the one we're talking about is the A9, the one that will allow firms who don't qualify because of the employment to go back and apply for the years, whichever year they qualify in. This will also cause less companies of coming back onto their tax rolls. This will cause about 130,000 loss per year. If the amendment was the A7s, which we still haven't seen, but I made it on the assumption that the A7 is still a choice, which gives the exemption anyhow, whether they qualified or not, that means they will get the exemption not year by year, but for the whole 5 years. This would increase that loss to about $330,000 for taxing districts. The finally, the lowering of the investment threshold for the geographically remote areas and the enterprise zones, and reducing the cap of investment from $25 million to $12.5 million. That in itself might not have a big impact, because some of the counties, the threshold, if you take it from the percentage of the assessed property values that they have, are already lower than the $12.5 million. But extending the exemption time frame from 2004 to 2006 opens up the window for a greater number of companies and firms to be involved in the zone. And assuming this will occur by the time the state economy is working off the current capacity excess that we have, this probably would start attracting more, at least we think one, in these areas which are 10 miles away from the I-5, who wasn't able to tag exact numbers into that scenario, but hopefully that will become a tool to be used. Okay. That's what I have, Mr. Chair. The of course, I'm sorry, the last thing to say is, with all the amendments, the fiscal office probably was not able at this point to estimate exact fiscal impacts into all of these.
At this point.
At this point.
Okay. Okay. Do we have Mike?
Chair Scott, members of the committee, I just want to take a minute to clarify a point related to the A-10 amendments. The A-10 amendment was intended to deal with the conflict that you heard between an urban renewal district, which is paying for the amendments, and a company that is hoping that they could qualify for construction in progress exemptions by virtue of being in an enterprise zone. The A-10 amendments come close, but not quite. So I would propose a conceptual amendment, which is at the end of line 8, add the word and, so that condition A becomes a requirement, and then at the end of line 9, add the word or, so that either condition B or C, in addition to condition A, are the triggers. And I can go through that one more time.
Please.
If you want. Okay. At the end of line 8, after the 308.665 notation, add the word and, so that it's clear that condition A is always a requirement. And then at the end of line B, after urban renewal district, cross strike out and add the word or, so that A is always a condition and either B or C is a condition. That will resolve the conflict that we heard about on Monday. And with that conceptual amendment, the department would support your moving House Bill 2299A with amendments 5, 8, 9, and 10 as conceptually amended. And the folks who've been involved in these discussions on this side of the room are all in agreement with those, the bill, with all of those amendments.
Okay. Questions? Representative Berger.
Mike, do me a favor, so that I understand the construction part of it and the property and the modifications and so forth, how that works. Just take a company, ABC, and you've got property in the enterprise zone with no building on it. or you have property in the Enterprise Zone with a building, but that building has been vacant. So there's some time constraints, just so that I understand exactly how
okay.
that is.
Chair Scott, members of the committee. I should go back and introduce myself since I neglected to do that when I came to it. My name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department, for the record. The question, I understand it, is essentially how does the enterprise zone process work, and specifically how does that work related to construction in progress? Mm-hmm. And I'll speak to a specific case with which I have personal experience, which is the Target Distribution Center located at the south end of Albany. Target looked to establish a regional distribution center that would essentially be a collection and then distribution point for all of the goods sold in 34 stores in the general vicinity of Albany. So essentially Oregon, Northern California, Washington, and some in Idaho. Okay. The site, when Target bought the site, consisted of land. In an enterprise zone, any existing assets when the project starts are not eligible for exemption. So if there had been an existing building on the site, or in the case of land in every case, there's no exemption allowed for those things that are already on the tax rolls. Now, in the case of Target, because of the nature of the business, it was eligible under existing law for construction in progress, which allows that if a business is not earning a value, not generating income based on an investment, they don't have to pay taxes on it because it's under construction. So Target took a couple of years to build a 600,000 square foot warehouse, and during that period of time when it was not available for operation, when the company couldn't make any income off of the property, it was exempt from taxes under the construction in progress codes within the state tax law. There is an exception to, there are three exceptions to those tax codes, which has created some confusion related to enterprise zones. In general, businesses locating on an enterprise zone, qualified businesses, are eligible for the construction in progress. Two of the exceptions are addressed by the bill, and one of them is the point of the current discussion. Those two exemptions are retail businesses that take less than a year to build. And it's not strictly retail because the enterprise zone doesn't facilitate eligibility under retail, but there are some classifications, commercial businesses, that is actually the way the law reads, I believe. Commercial businesses that take less than a year to build are not allowed the construction in progress exemption. So even if a company were to not be open for business on January 1st, which is the threshold for the enterprise zone exemption, they would have to pay taxes under the current law. For those types of eligible business, enterprise zone eligible businesses located in an enterprise zone, the bill would allow them to receive a construction in progress. If construction takes more than a year, they are currently eligible. So there's a little window in there where some businesses can get a benefit and some can't. The other one are the centrally assessed properties, which we're talking about here. Those are essentially utility companies. It's not as simple as that, but that's more or less what it is. The phone company, the gas company, electrical generating facilities and distribution. In the old days, when the PUC regulated prices and essentially the power company generated the power to sell to its consumers locally, PGE serving Salem would be an example, that wasn't an issue because they just passed those taxes onto their rate base and we all paid for them. In today's market, it's a competitive environment for what are called merchant generating facilities. And the project we've heard about, the Avista project, you also heard the Umatilla County assessor talk about the Coyote Springs project. These are projects that essentially make a product for sale and export. They make electricity not necessarily to distribute locally, but to sell on the market. So for them, the old model doesn't work. For them, like any other business, the cost of their facility becomes part of the structure of their retail sales cost, and makes a difference as to whether or not the economics work out. So we're proposing that all businesses located in an enterprise zone, including those two classes of centrally assessed businesses that are eligible, be treated the same. And the Dash 10 amendment gets to that, but allows for the circumstance that you heard about from Columbia County, where they're providing the infrastructure to serve the facility through an urban renewal district, which has to use the tax increment from the new development to pay for those services. So without them, without the concession in the Dash 10 amendments, Columbia County has provided those infrastructure and has no way to pay for them. Did that get to the question?
Yeah. It's not, it's a simple matter. So each company then, you have to really take it and analyze it as to exactly what kind of eligibility they have, and it becomes more complex if it's urban renewal and enterprise.
Chair Scott, Representative Verger, under the enterprise zone statute, a qualified company is a qualified company. What we're saying here is, in the cases where right now it doesn't matter whether or not there's an urban renewal district. The issue with Columbia County is the centrally assessed properties were not eligible for construction in progress, so they went ahead and pursued the project under the law that was in place. This would change that, so the revenue mechanism they were going to use to pay for the infrastructure would go away. We're saying, time out, wait a minute, if there is an urban renewal district, we'll make an exception so that, particularly for the cases that have already happened, we don't change the rules in the middle of the game.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Williams.
I move the adoption of the Dash A5 amendments to House Bill 2299.
Okay, it's been moved by Representative Williams, adoption of A5. Anyone have objections? Seeing none, we'll A5 are in.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Williams.
I move the adoption of the A8 amendments to House Bill 2299.
Representative Williams has moved A8. Anyone have objections? Seeing none, A8.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the A9 amendments to House Bill 2299.
Representative Williams moves the adoption of A9 to 2299. Any objections? Seeing none, A9s are
in. Mr. Chair, I move conceptual amendments to the Dash A10 amendments. The conceptual amendments would be on line 8, striking the semicolon and inserting the word "and." And on line 9, striking the word "and" following the semicolon and inserting the word "or."
Representative Williams moves A10 conceptually on line 8, striking semicolon, adding "and." On line 9, after semicolon, striking "and," inserting "er." Or, excuse me.
Could be "er."
Er. Any objections? A10 conceptually are in.
Mr. Chair, after conceptually amending, then I'd move the A10s as conceptually amended into House Bill 2299. So we have to move the conceptual amendment and then move the amendment as amended.
Okay. Representative Williams moves A10 as amended. Any objections? Seeing none, A10.
Have I got them all? I think I went down the list. A5s, A8s, A9s, and A10s.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2299 as amended, including conceptually amended by the Dash A10s, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 2299 as amended, including the conceptually amended 10s, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
My only discussion, Mr. Chair, would be that either Representative Berger or Haas, who have lived this bill through two committees, ought to have to carry it on the floor.
I'll do it.
Chair,
you've got to be kidding.
I'd just be happy to vote this bill off the island.
I don't mind kidding.
Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Hobson?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Richard?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Okay. It's 2299 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We need a carrier. Who So Representative Berger will. Okay. Close the work session on 2299, and 4 minutes later than the chair yesterday, we'll adjourn.
Good job. Good job. Good job.